A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The light's probably gone.
So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 463. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about Space Precinct. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, indeed we are. We are taking one of our usually annual trips to the fantastic worlds of Gerry Anderson's television shows, looking at, this time, Space Precinct, that ran from 1994 to 1995 on a variety of different stations that we'll talk about later on. But here in the UK, it was on Sky TV and BBC Two. 24 episodes in total. They're 45 minutes long. And it is a mixture of live action with a whole variety of effects, masks, animatronics, model work, early CGI, quite a bundle of stuff in there.
Yes, and it is a police procedural series set on a futuristic space station crewed by humans and aliens and robots. And this is a police station space station.
Indeed, none other.
Yes. So getting into the setup, Lieutenant Brogan is adjusting to his life as a police officer on Station 88 in orbit above Demeter City on the planet Altor. And it's a very busy city in an area of space where lots of things are going on, lots of commerce and travelers and apparently a lot of crime. And he is bringing his experience as a New York police officer to this arena.
And as you say, Brian, it is a very busy beat for this police force and for Brogan. And the force is made up, so it's multiracial. It's a mixture of humans, of several different alien species. There's even an experimental robot in there, all trying to maintain law and order. Each episode, they're pretty much standalones, as we'll talk about a bit as we go along. And each episode brings Brogan and his colleagues a new case, new challenges. A lot of them are some sort of familiar police problems that we'd recognise from other police shows. But of course, here we're in space. We've got a science fiction futuristic twist to a lot of the cases.
Yes, absolutely. And they have spaceships and advanced futuristic weapons. There's a robot here. Some of the aliens have powers that they use in different situations. We have flying police cars that have cannons on them and so on.
A lot of high-tech stuff in the battle to preserve law and order in space.
Of course. And the technology and some of the things like that has a very Anderson-esque feel to it, I think.
Yes.
So getting into the characters, Patrick Brogan, played by Ted Shackelford, is an NYPD detective, police detective from New York, who was transferred to this new space precinct. And he has moved with his family and is struggling with a bit of a life-work balance thing with trying to be there for his family, who we see quite a bit, and to meet the challenges of the job as well.
Yes, and of course it is extremely challenging when you're police lieutenant in a Gerry Anderson world. He is assisted by his partner, Officer Jack Haldane, played by the actor Rob Youngblood, Brogan's work partner, a younger, less experienced police officer, but still pretty capable, and they form a good partnership. With Brogan being happily married with a family, Haldane has sort of gets to be the young, single, in a way, romantic lead at times, because he's a chap who's interested in relationships with a variety of, how shall I say, space women, but also possibly with a work partner or a work colleague or two as well, I'd have thought, Brian.
Yes, I think we will talk about that a little bit more as we go. Officer Jane Castle, played by Simone Bendix, is another human police officer based in the space precinct and is often sent out as backup for Brogan and Haldane, or is off doing her own separate missions in her own separate cases. And there is maybe a potential romantic interest there with Jack Haldane.
Certainly a flirtatious work relationship, it would seem. Jane Castle is partnered with Officer Aurelia Tuck, played by Mary Woodvine. So she is the work partner, the police partner, and she is our first of our several alien characters. She is a Tarn alien, a large bulbous head with a central forehead third eye. And the third eye opens when she can use her psychic powers, because we learn that Tarns have a degree of psychic power, both telepathy and telekinesis, it seems, Brian.
Yes, and that comes up with Officer Tuck and with a number of Tarn characters, sometimes with Tarn villains and so on. Captain Rexley Podley, played by Jerome Willis, is a Kreon alien, so different alien species, and he is the captain in charge of the precinct. Oddly, and maybe stereotypically, he has an Irish accent, and yeah, seems to be an alien and an Irishman at the same time.
He must have had his police training in Ireland, I guess, Brian.
I suppose so.
Now, we mentioned that Lieutenant Brogan is a married man. He is married to the lovely Sally Brogan, played by Nancy Paul, his long-suffering wife, who is doing it all, Brian, because she is a doctor. She seems to have an interest in alien medicine. She's also raising the two kids, running the home, often expressing a degree of sort of polite exasperation because her husband is busy on a case and is either late or is called away for work. Interestingly, there's at least one episode, I think, if not more, where her medical expertise comes in useful, particularly in dealing with alien medicine, alien pregnancy and birth, I seem to remember. So she's an interesting character, and it's slightly unfortunate that Brogan is so busy because the show demands it.
Yes, she does seem to be doing everything all at once. And yeah, her medical expertise comes up on a few occasions. So she's, you know, a homemaker and raising the kids and, you know, a full-time doctor and also acting as a medical consultant, it seems. So yeah, lots going on with her. Slow-mo is the robot on the station, who is something of a librarian and database and a forensic analyst, but also serves drinks and snacks and can be the comic relief at times. He's not the only comic relief, but he can be comic relief in there sometimes. Slow-mo was voiced by Gary Martin.
A not unusual role for a Gerry Anderson show to have this sort of robot or assistant who, particularly Slow-Mo, seems to be broken down a lot of the time. So there's develops a lot of faults and needs quite a lot of maintenance.
Yeah, it is reminiscent of some of the early Gerry Anderson stuff. They had the robot character in Fireball XL5 who was sort of taking care of things and so on.
Not a million miles away from that.
Okay, I think we should get into our production notes now. So we start with Gerry Anderson, of course, who was the creator of a lot of different shows, particularly the Super Marionation puppet shows of the 60s that we've talked about, many of those. And by this time, he had already done multiple live action shows in science fiction. Particularly, he did UFO and Space 1999, both in the 1970s. So this was coming back to do a live action TV series again. And as always, Anderson wanted to crack into the American TV market, which would provide the kind of budget that his shows and his vision vision for his shows would require.
Yes, and we've talked about that, I think, whenever we've discussed Gerry Anderson's shows, trying to break the American market. And strangely enough, in 1985, he was actually on a flight back from New York, where I suspect he'd been dealing with this very issue concerning his puppet show Terrorhawks, which we've talked about in the past, which was not proving to be a big hit in the US. It seemed that puppets were out of fashion, particularly for the US TV market at the time. So he was trying to come up with some idea for a new show that would feature live action, but he could also mix in actors in masks, animatronics and models, the sort of stuff that he was famous for. And he came up with the idea of a police show while he was on this flight. And the idea that popped into his head was Hill Street Blues in space. This idea, not surprisingly, of a precinct with a number of different characters and a number of different stories all going as police officers just tried to go about their day and do their job.
That's right. And at the time, Anderson was working with Christopher Burr. They were co-producing on some things at that point. And they set out to make a pilot episode for this space police type show. And the result was a pilot called Space Police. It was about 50 minutes long, and it starred Shane Rimmer as Lieutenant Chuck Brogan, a grizzled NYPD cop transferred to a police force on a space station. And he was in command of that whole station at that point and had a variety of costumed actors and puppets around him as other police characters and in sort of villainous roles and things as well.
And I'm sure most of our listeners know that Shane Rimmer was the voice of Scott Tracy in Thunderbirds. He was an actor with a long, illustrious career. He was in Bond films. You and I met him at a Big Finish Day, Brian.
Yes, we did.
Which was absolutely splendid. So we've always been interested in the Space Police pilot. We have touched upon it briefly because it cropped up, I think, when we covered The Day After Tomorrow by Gerry Anderson, but particularly when we did Dick Spanner PI from the Lost Worlds of Gerry Anderson DVD set. And Space Police is on that DVD set, I believe, Brian.
Yes, it is. There's one episode of Dick Spanner PI that was considered a lost episode that's on that set, and Space Police is as well. I believe when we covered Dick Spanner PI, we watched it on an official YouTube release.
Oh, that's right, yes.
But Shane Rimmer starred in Dick Spanner PI, and this was close to the time period of that Space Police pilot, so it's not too surprising that he would be involved there.
So we've got Gerry Anderson and Christopher Burr with this pilot they've made, and they are taking it around various television production companies, as you can imagine. They also made a 2-minute trailer based on this pilot episode, which obviously they could show quickly. Later on, they re-cut this trailer into something slightly longer called Reloaded, which you've had a chance to see, Brian, I think.
Yes, I did. And it uses a lot of effect shots and shots of sort of alien villains from the Space Police, but a new cast of human characters. So it did not feature Shane Rimmer. It had someone else. And some of the characters that were later in Space Precinct were introduced at this point in Reloaded.
So they're taking it round. They did have some interest from a couple of TV companies that were of interest to us. First of all, Jim Henson's production company, Henson International Television, were interested, but then I believe there was a management buyout and the company changed hands in 1989 and dropped any interest in Space Police as it was known then. So that one fell apart, I'm afraid.
I think that's fascinating. Having a Gerry Anderson show at the Henson production company would have been really interesting. You know, the notes coming back and the resources available would have been different. So we could have had something really interesting if that had happened. could have been quite different. However, it did not. And the BBC, who did not usually commission things from Gerry Anderson stuff, usually it was on the ITV side. The BBC commissioned 13 episodes, but they had to pull out of that deal after some internal reorganization there, and the BBC budgets were slashed. So the BBC was out in terms of producing the show. However, the American company Grove Television was interested, and they picked it up and ordered 24 episodes. And the title was changed from Space Police to Space Precinct because apparently Lego had a trademark for Space Police for its kits.
So it becomes Space Precinct. It's found a home. They start production. Interestingly, the very first episode was written by Paul Mayhew Archer. We'll come back to that episode zero in a moment. I'll notice the first episode to be broadcast was directed by none other than John Glenn, a director of film who we know for his long association with the James Bond franchise and for directing, I think I'm right in saying, Brian, he directed 5 Bond movies in a row from For Your Eyes Only through to License to Kill, and he saw the changeover from Roger Moore to Timothy Dalton.
Yes, he was basically the James Bond director of the 1980s.
So he directs 7 of the episodes of the 24 that were made. I also noted that while I was looking at directors, that the Blood on Satan's Claw director, Piers Haggard, Blood on Satan's Claw, of course, being one of the unholy trinity of British folk horrors, Piers Haggard directed 3 of the episodes as well, which at least stood out to me. We've also got a visual effects director, Stephen Begg, who of course was in charge of the characteristic Anderson model shots and, as I know from watching the special features, those explosions, which a Gerry Anderson production seems almost would not be right without some models exploding at some point, Brian.
Yes, that's right. And the series was shot at Pinewood Studios with the special effects sequences shot at Shepperton. And the aliens required casts of the actors' heads, which the creature effects team could then build these alien masks on. And the masks were fitted with some animatronics. So you had remote controlled things for controlling the eyes and the eyebrows and doing some of the facial expressions and so on.
And if you watch the making of a Space Precinct documentary, you will see the puppeteers standing just offset with their remote controls in their hands, operating the various alien heads. And one of those puppeteers is Anderson veteran Christine Glanville, which I was delighted to see, you know, from way back in the Slough studio, standing on the gantry operating the strings, and now standing offset in 1994 operating remote control alien heads.
That's lovely. That's, you know, 35 years of, or close to 35 years of working on Anderson productions at this point.
Amazing stuff. Now, not surprisingly, you'll also see in the making of documentary that wearing these giant latex heads, which were packed with animatronics, battery-operated engines, doing this under studio lights, because this is all studio work, was quite difficult and hot for the actors. They could just about see out of the alien mouths or through slits in the latex for the faces, but navigating the sets was a bit of a nightmare, as well as handling props wearing their sort of alien creature gloves that they had to wear. You can see one of the sort of mime and performance actors having to have the head removed on set because he was becoming quite too hot. That was a particularly large and cumbersome head. The lead actors in the police force certainly all seem to be doing their own voices through the masks, but obviously some of the more complicated heads require dubbing. And in fact, I noted there seemed to be quite a lot of ADR on this show. Sometimes I was a bit surprised because actors that are not wearing masks seem to be dubbed at times as well, Brian.
Yeah, that does happen with ADR being done on things. I suspect they, with all of the animatronics and different different things, and they probably couldn't use much of the on-set sound because you had, you know, some things that were too noisy, and, you know, the set floors would sound wrong when you walked on them and so on.
Yeah.
Originally, production had included an introductory Welcome to Demeter City episode that would show the Brogan family traveling to Altor in suspended animation, and they would give a bit more of an origin story for Brogan and his family. But the costs of this episode and the rush to meet the U.S. syndication deadline of October 1994 meant that they did not produce it. There is, apparently, IMDb has a broadcast date, but that's not correct. It was never actually produced. And some parts of the plot were actually used later on. And Big Finish has an audio novel that you can listen to that is based on that pilot script.
Oh, fascinating. We'll be coming back to that a bit in our next episode. Now, not surprisingly, with a show that does mostly standalone episodes, they're going to get through quite a number of supporting cast members. And there are some familiar faces along the way for us, Brian. We noted, or at least spotted, Idris Elba in possibly one of his very first screen roles, playing a pizza delivery guy. A very young Ray Winston. I also spotted the Bond girl, Mariam Dabo, who was in one of the John Glenn. She was in the first Timothy Dalton film, I believe, wasn't she? The Living Daylights.
That's right, yes.
I also saw Nicholas Grace, who we saw as the Sheriff of Nottingham in Robin of Sherwood. Legendary stuntman Pat Roach from the Indiana Jones movies is in there. Kinvig's Tony Haygarth crops up again. We've talked about him not too long ago. Stephen Burkoff gets to play a bad guy, which presumably got, you know, financed another one of his theatre shows. And Burt Kwok, who has been in just about every TV show and movie ever made, at least in the 20th century, it seems, turns up as well. So there's some great faces and names to look out for along the way, Brian.
Yes, there are some nice guest appearances along the way in this, for sure. Space Precinct was first broadcast in the U.S. in October 1994. That was syndicated, so the dates and episode orders do vary a little bit.
Yes, as ever with an Anderson show with standalone episodes, the episode broadcast order changes from area to area. In the UK, we know it started broadcasting on Sky One in March 1995. And then it began repeats on BBC Two on the 18th of September, 1995. I can be more precise about that one because the Radio Times Genome Listings website is accurate on that, I believe. Thank goodness. So, from production, let's move to availability and tell you how you can watch Space Precinct. Here in Region 2, there is a DVD box set for £20 currently. It includes all the episodes, the making of documentary that I've been talking about, although that documentary is also available on YouTube. There are PDFs, there are image galleries, creature test shoots, and so on. I would say that it's a network DVD release, and we know that network DVD are no more, and therefore their stocks, when they're gone, they're gone. So if you do want to get the DVD, I think you're going to need to get it fairly quickly because these ones are selling out. However, luckily, we do have it on streaming at the moment. It's on ITVX as part of their premium subscription service, which is the new home of BritBox. So if you get an ITVX subscription, you'll be able to watch all of the episodes on there, which is where I've been looking at it. And then I watched the documentary on YouTube. Over in Region 1, Brian?
In Region 1, it has been released on DVD a couple of times, I think. I've seen it on Amazon for about $52 US and $72 Canadian, but there are a couple of editions, so if you look around, you might be able to do a little bit better than that. It is bundled as part of Amazon Prime in the US. So if you're a Prime member in the US, you should be able to watch it for free. It is also on the Shout TV streaming service, and it's certainly available on there in Canada with ads. I think it probably would be available in the US as well. And that's how I watched it, on Shout TV.
Very nice. Okay, so come back and join us next time. We're going to actually get into a little bit more detail on the types of episodes and the cases that the Space Precinct have to deal with. We'll talk about responses to the show, how well it did, and why perhaps it may have slightly missed its mark. We'll talk about that more next time. Plus, we've also, unusually for a while, we've got some spin-offs to cover this time, Brian.
Yes, we do. And of course, we will also have our own reviews and recommendations, our own thoughts about the show. So plenty to talk about next time. Until then, you can find all 460-some episodes of British Invaders on BritishInvaders.com. There are a bunch of Gerry Anderson shows that we've covered there, of course. And please search for British Invaders on Facebook to join our Facebook group. And you can follow us on Threads and on Instagram. We are British_Invaders_podcast on both of those platforms.
Yes, please give us a follow. Tell us what you think of Space Precinct and also some tips and recommendations for future shows we might want to cover. And please find us as part of the Voice of Geeks Network at voguenetwork.com. Come along to the Voice of Geeks for other podcasts, gaming content, streaming, and much more at the Voice of Geeks.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. It's Eamon from England also signing off.